When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
Another episode of the Inside EVs podcast. My name is Seth Miersma. I'm the editor-in-chief of Inside EVs and MotorOne.com. And I'm actually just joining you for a minute today. I'm happy to say that I'm going to be able to kick off to Alex Goy, who you haven't met before, one of our new hosts, Hazel and Miss Go Electric, who we spoke with last week. I'm in Monterey, so I've got some work to do out here at Pebble Beach and the Quail and stuff like that this week. But unfortunately, I'm stopping by this morning because I have some pretty sad news from the Inside EVs family. Viewers and listeners who have been following Inside EVs for a while will certainly recognize the byline of our senior editor, Stephen Loveday. I found out a little less than a year ago that Stephen was going to have surgery to address cancer that they had discovered in his tongue and lymph nodes. And over the course of the year, Stephen has been sort of in and out, writing for the site when he was able, and then undergoing lots of treatments and many surgeries to try and address this horrible problem in the meantime. And then, unfortunately, this week I got the news from Eric Loveday, who is our site's editor and Stephen's brother, that he had entered hospice and was unresponsive, which is sort of where the story is now. So I wanted to share that with, again, I know that there's a lot of crossover between people who read the site every day and come to see the podcast and get their EV news in different ways. I've got to say that personally, I worked with Stephen a little bit in my first go around with the company a few years ago. And then again, obviously over the last 2 years, I've always found him to be one of the most knowledgeable and passionate editors that I've ever worked with, honestly, certainly in the EV space. I know that he's going to really be missed by you guys, his loyal readers, us, his coworkers, and of course his family. So all our hearts are breaking for his wife, Janine, and their three kids and their family. We're going to share a link to a GoFundMe that the family has set up to try and defray some of the cost of the extensive medical bills and things like that. So we'll share that with you, and anybody who's able to do anything, I know it's very much appreciated. But on that note, sorry to start so dour, obviously big news inside our family, but we've got a ton of stuff to talk about today. We've got lots of EVs debuting. We've got one accidental sort of hybrid to talk about. I know Alex has been driving miniature cars, and the team has been doing lots of kind of amazing stuff. So I will leave it at that. I will wave goodbye to everybody. Thanks everybody for joining us, and we will see you next week. I'll watch you guys online.
Well, thank you very much, Seth. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's Inside EVs. I'm the new boy this week. Last week, you guys were with the new boys. This week, I'm the new boy. Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an automotive journalist. I say stuff at cameras and write words and stuff about cars. I think they're great. joining this week, we have the lovely Hazel Southwell. Say hello, Hazel.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? Good week?
Yeah. Good week. There's some cool stories that we've got to discuss. I'm going to get to mention fluids way too much.
A lot of fluids coming up. A lot of fluids. I didn't think it was that kind of show, but apparently it is. And Miss Go Electric, lovely Lacey. Hello, how are you?
Very good. How are you guys?
Yeah.
Everything is shiny. What have you been up to this week? Anything good? Give us the skinny.
Oof. I mean, basically just what Hazel said. There are a lot of stories, and I have been vicariously living through everyone that has been at Car Week in Monterey, so I am very jealous. But it's awesome to see all the content coming out of there, because now it seems like everyone's revealing EVs there every year for the last, gosh, almost like 10 years, if not longer. So,
well, seeing as we're talking about Car Week, let's start with it. There's been a lot going on. I am also intensely jealous of all the people that are out there, because it looks bloody lovely.
EV news.
Hazel, you were about to say something.
I was. No, I was just going to say, like, Car Week. Like, every year I'm like, Car Week. I'm not bothered about Car Week. I'm not bothered that I'd have to get a transatlantic flight to go to Car Week. I'm not fussed that I'm not at Car Week. And then Car Week's happening. And I'm like...
I always think, it's like Goodwood, but the Americans need a week for it for some reason. We only need 4 days, well, 3 days this year. But no, every year, just the news that comes out of it is incredible. So what have we been looking at this week, team? What have we got?
There's a Rolls-Royce.
There's a Rolls-Royce. The Rolls-Royce Spectre, super shiny, beautiful thing. And it's a sort of debut for the car. In North America at Car Week. The picture they've sent out, the color of that car is interesting.
Rolls does that. They always have, they come to these events and try to make a splash, because as if the car isn't as eye-catching enough.
I mean, it's a mix between terracotta and something you'd cough up after a heavy night. I mean, it's quite powerful, isn't it?
It looks quite a lot like a faded Royal Mail van, which I'm aware is something only Alex will get.
But, it's incredibly niche reference. But for our listeners who don't quite understand that, way, way, way back when Royal Mail was good and efficient, they bought lots of, was it Ford Fiesta vans and Vauxhall Corsa vans, and they were all painted very badly, and they were bright red when they started, and then they went that colour. but yeah, it's...
90s mauve or something, like,
yeah,
I don't know, like very 90s color to me. I don't know why.
It's a shade I would impulse buy as a lipstick and never wear.
I think I have a suit that color, actually. Again, impulse bought, never worn. What do we make of the Spectre? Because it's Rolls-Royce's first EV. They say it's a Rolls-Royce first and an EV second. Reviews have been quite positive about it at the pre-drives. I've spent a bit of time, I had a look at it tail end of last year when they revealed it. It seems every inch a Rolls-Royce. But what do we make of it?
Well, as you know, Alex and I know each other a bit. And the last few times we've met, I know you've had to listen to me complaining about my chauffeur going on and on and on about, like, He thinks that we should have like a more green vehicle. And so I was really pleased to finally be able to kind of quieten those concerns with the Spectre.
I mean, my chauffeur had similar concerns, except I'd rather be in the back and have my own door rather than have to crawl in. Via, like, that's very undignified. I did that when I was a teenager.
I like it. I mean, I think that, you know, it just still makes me annoyed at this stage that there are still some luxury brands that haven't come out with any EV models, because it's such a perfect fit. This is what the customer wants from Rolls-Royce. I spent a lot of time. They were one of my clients for a long time. I launched the Ghost. I've done a lot of drives with customers and Phantom and a bunch of their other products. I haven't got my hands on this yet, but I love the idea of it. I'm glad they're finally moving towards going electric because it just seems like a natural, obvious fit. Their customers want a really quiet ride. But to your point, too, most of them, they have a chauffeur. So this one, they're going to have to drive on their own.
Yeah. Too bad. And so something at the unveil, something that was noted is that Rolls-Royce drivers are increasingly driving themselves now. It was sort of noted with successive cars like the Dawn and the Wraith, where people would buy the Rolls-Royce for them and they'd want that little bit of sporting edge. So it kind of makes sense. I mean, they're on the point that Rolls was taking a while to kind of get its act together, making an EV and entering the market. I mean, there's a little bit of cross-brandonization with BMW. Obviously the two brands at the same time were thinking about the same thing, and it made sense for the two of them to talk at certain points. And if you look at battery sizes and things like that and ranges, these things start to make a little bit of sense. But Rolls was saying that their people, their owners have been crying out for it, and now they feel it feels it's in the right space to deliver. I think it's a really cool car. I want to have a go in it. But from everything I've heard, it's every inch the Rolls-Royce. And if there's any car manufacturer in the world, that would suit an electric powertrain properly, just as par for the course, it's Rolls-Royce. It always will be, because they've always been about being quiet, being quick, and being luxurious, and that just does it.
Yeah, and it basically looks like a lot of the innards are, other than the powertrain, Ghost, like that next generation platform that is going to have like the planar suspension system. So I'm sure it's going to perform really well as far as like comfort and all that you would expect, because all the rest of the stuff in there looks like it's Ghost.
Yeah. But that's not a bad thing. Ghost's really nice.
I know. That's what I'm saying. That's good.
So moving slightly less premium, the Acura ZDX, something Hazel and I would know very little about, because we don't get Acuras on our tiny little island, because we get Hondas and that's about it. So Lacey, what can you tell us about the new ZDX?
Yeah, so Acura came out. It used to be the Precision concept that they announced last year at Car Week. And now it's finally going into production. And many of you probably already know this, but it is on the Ultium platform. It's going to be basically a Cadillac Lyriq, but with the Acura pizzazz to it. But 325 mile range, you'll have a couple different variants, a Type S or a A-Spec, I believe it was called. But essentially, price point is going to start around $60,000. And then the higher end spec is going to be around $70,000. That's all they've really said to us as far as specifications go. But 500 horsepower, I mean, pretty much what you would expect out of the Lyriq you're going to get out of this Acura, except for a little bit different, of course, brand identity. I like the design of it. I think it looks good on the exterior. And I think we need more EVs that are, you know, kind of less polarizing design that appeal to a wider audience. And I think that does this. The interior, I had a lot of people commenting when I was posting the specifications of this on my X account, is they think that the interior is not as premium as what they would expect for a luxury car. But to me, I've always just thought like, yeah, Acura, they are the premium segment. They are the luxury category, but also they've always in my mind been like value oriented. So they competed more with like the Lincolns of the world and the Cadillacs of the world. And not to say that they're not like super luxurious, but I would argue that if you're used to like a Mercedes quality, then this is probably not like as luxurious feeling to you. But
there's a lot of leather in there, but also a worrying amount of plastic. Is that
yes,
what you get?
Yeah. Yes, quite a bit. But it has Google built in, which is I absolutely love that system. GM's pretty much going that route. It has a 3,500 pound towing capacity. So it looks like spec wise, it's going to be pretty good. 102 kilowatt hour battery pack, 190 kilowatt DC fast charging. So spec-wise, I think it looks pretty good, and I'm happy to see more of this form factor come to the market or for people who might be loyalists to Acura or just want something that looks a little bit different.
Purely on the looks front, Hazel, I think you and I would quite like to see a Honda badged one of those driving down the street. That would be quite cool.
It does look quite cool. And I'm kind of glad Lacey brought up like non-polarizing looks.
Here we go.
Oh yeah, yeah. I decided I was going to be the villain of this podcast, and I'm doing it. It looks fine. It looks like a fairly large, from a UK perspective, SUV. I noticed that like a lot of the push is that this is going to be the fastest accelerating, most powerful SUV ever, which, aside from the fact that the numbers don't really suggest that, it does sort of look like a half price, literally half the price version of the BMW iX without that big front grille that I ended up.
That's an improvement, frankly, but you know.
Oh, and technically, what is it like? Way less than half. The iX is pretty expensive.
Yeah, it's a very the iX is a very, very spendy car, no matter how you look at it and which powertrain you get in it. If we're going to talk, there's a couple more things from Monterey I want to talk about before we move on to our next kind of our next big chunko story. The thing that that's kind of appealed to me is the Bentley has made a little blower. So the blower is the kind of their legendary race car that was legendarily bad at racing. It kept eating its spark plugs, and it was a supercharged thing. I think Ettore Bugatti called them the world's fastest lorries or something like that. And there's a company based in Bicester in the UK called the Little Car Company, and it makes little versions of big cars. They started off with a Bugatti Type 35, again, old school race car. They did an Aston Martin Vantage, like the Bond car. They did a Bond edition with chain guns in the headlights. It's all very cool. They've done a Ferrari Testarossa J, which is an officially licensed Ferrari product. You order them through Ferrari dealerships. There it is on the site. And now they've done a Bentley blower. Now, what makes this fascinating is that it's 85% size, 85% of the size of the full fat blower, which even though it is vast, we're talking like Range Rover big kind of, you can get four people in it, but you're very hemmed in because the wheels go very far out, but the fuselage of the thing is very narrow. At 85%, you can only fit two people in it. You sit tandem.
I'm so glad you clarified that, because I was like, how are you getting four people in that?
You are not getting four people in the little one. Well, the thing is, it's 85%, and I heard it's about the size of a Mark I Golf. But the interesting thing is, if you see the image on your screen, or those of you who are listening, there's a number plate on it. It's road legal. It's a car. It's an actual car.
It's a car.
It's a real car that you can park on your driveway. So the blower's kind of standard, the blower's signature thing is its supercharger bolted to the front. And on the little car company one, on the blower junior, that's where you charge it from. It's mad. There's no word on pricing yet. The thing about it that appeals to me is that with everything the little car company does, everything is perfect. So it is a replica of Bentley's blower. So the blower they modeled it off is team car number two. It raced at Le Mans back in the 20s. It's a truly bizarre little thing. That's one of Bentley's Monterey unveils. The next one, it'll be later today, so a little bit after we've recorded, and they say it's a new flagship. But this, I mean, two questions. One, would you? And two, if you saw it on the street, what would you think?
I would, and I can tell you exactly what I want to do with that, which is that I want to take it to the Shelsley Walsh Hill Climb. Shelsley Walsh is the oldest continuously running motorsport facility in the world. And it's a very steep hill climb in the kind of the Midlands of the UK. So sort of the Pikes Peak of the UK, in the sense it's like a lot smaller and generally kind of quainter.
And it's covered in men with beards going, oh, nice time. Oh,
yeah. But because this is electric, it was probably Monster the Hill, because you'd like the talk is obviously there. And yeah, I want to run up a really old hill climb in this.
That thing is awesome.
But still.
It's wicked. It's one of my favouritest things to come out of Monterey so far. One more little bit of Monterey news that we just wanted to kind of shoehorn in. It might not be everyone's cup of tea. The Zenvo Aurora. It's a hybrid, not a proper EV, but the hybrid means it can have 1,450 horsepower.
For how much?
$2.83 million. It's an affordable car. It's an affordable car. There are two versions of it.
How many Acuras can you get for that?
How many would you want?
Billionaires still buying cars?
Yes.
Yeah, they got to park their money somewhere.
In worrying amounts, I think. So the company Zenvo was founded by a man called Trolls, who is hilarious because he used to. Yes, it's real. He's from Denmark. He's a very, very lovely guy. He got his start basically in a tuning shop in Denmark, and all they did was just built cars with millions of horsepower. He then decided he wanted to build his own, so he built the Zenvo, and he wanted to be a lightweight, moderately powered thing. And then his id took over and went all the power. So they built these like turbocharged, supercharged, monstrous V8s with I think 1,200 horsepower was the TSRS, and they have wings that do that, and sort of they're quadrupedal or something. They're ludicrous. And this is kind of Zenvo's first attempt at something a little more polished, because the problem with Zenvos previously, I think at least, was that they were a little bit, you know, you could see the money went into the engine but not into things like fit and finish or into other tech, whereas this looks kind of Aston Valkyrie-esque. It's quite the thing. I think it looks like something you'd find in a Grand Theft Auto game.
It is cool looking, and like I am impressed by the lightweighting. In terms of the version of it that comes with three electric motors because like it didn't have enough horsepower in the first place. Obviously,
that's the Agile, which is the track one. That's the not track one.
So that's only £3,197 allegedly. I don't know if that's curb weight or what, but so given all of those motors, the fact it does have an internal combustion engine, the fact it must be carrying, well, that might be unfueled weight as well, etc. Like that is an impressive piece of lightweighting. It does look cool. If you're a billionaire who either knows how to throw something around a track or thinks they know how to throw something around a track, then like, hello, here's something to spend your money on.
There are a lot of those, actually.
fun Zenvo fact. The COMD boss man of Lego drives a Zenvo.
Interesting. I would say that it kind of looks from the side profile, it reminds me of the Senna just because of the cutouts on the door and stuff like that. Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know. If I had that money, that's probably not. Obviously, I'm partial because I am Miss Go Electric. So I want to go electric completely. Battery electric only. But
It is a bit of a cheat, I'll admit. But it's a very big, silly hypercar. And at least it's a kind of nod to electrification, using it for power and performance. So far, soon they'll go all EV eventually. But I wonder whether there'll be one of those stop-out brands that go, we're never going to go electric because... Blah, 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 blah.
Well, you know, that's just so funny to me, because a lot of the big, like the guys that have started these small coach build type companies or low volume hypercar companies, Koenigsegg or Hennessy. Like, these guys daily drive Model S's. Like, they drive electric cars. Like, they're not bashing them or anything. So I think that it's just a matter of time that they bring the, it's more of like a cultural political thing than anything, in my opinion, that they just see it as, you know, oh, they're taking away our guns, you know, like
they're taking away our cylinders.
Right.
Oh, V8 no, till I die.
Exactly. But you know, if EVs can continue to win on merit, then eventually we will get them all.
Eventually. Soon. Soon. Another couple of quick bits from Monterey. That kind of that are actually EV. Pininfarina's done a Barchetta version of the Battista hypercar. It is very expensive and it's very, very quick. 0-60 in less than 2 seconds, more than 186 miles an hour. Deeply, deeply cool. It looks mega. And what was the other thing? Oh, and Jenson Button off of winning Formula One has finally specced his Lotus Evija, and it's white with green bits on it. It's great. I like it. It's a beauty. But let us return to more stable ground. Let's talk about Fisker. How are you all feeling about Fisker?
The LOL. Day... Stable. LOL. What the hell?
True. This is famously the man who brought out the VLF Force One, which was a Dodge Viper in a very pretty dress, if memory serves, and it used a Volkswagen lettering on the back, which made me laugh heartily. But it revealed thousands of new cars in a sort of 2010 Lotus-esque manner, going, we've got loads of new cars for you. Where do you guys want to start with this? Because my brain kind of, I went a little bit cross-eyed and confused because there are so many of the things.
This is typical fashion for Henrik.
This is just what he does.
Yes, this is what he does. I think he's kind of like reined himself in a little bit because he's got a public company now because he's backed. So he's got to kind of be careful with what he says. But, you know, I get a lot of people that ask me like, oh, why don't you talk about Fisker a lot? It's like, because I know his history and I know that he is like a good marketer. Like, he says a lot of things and a lot of things might not be exactly on par with the course. So yeah. I think you just got to be careful with him. And I know that he's delivered his first Ocean, which is great.
He's been promising to deliver his first Ocean for how long now?
Yes.
Six
for
years?
A very long time. And yes. He's already showing off more concept cars or more like pre-production versions of what he plans to come out with. And don't get me wrong, I do want to see more EVs, different companies coming out with different products, and I think they look pretty cool. I mean, he's a brilliant designer. As we know, he's penned some of the most iconic cars, the BMW Z8. He's done brilliant things, but he just is, in my opinion, not very trustworthy. So I always like take it with a grain of salt, whatever he's doing. And conflicted about Fisker, really need the affordable entries. I agree with you, Steve. Like, it's awesome that he's saying, but I really want to know, like, how is he going to hit these price points? I've seen some reviews. Technically, the Ocean starts, you know, in the 30s, and that's really wonderful. I just, you know, he's contract manufacturing. Can you get enough volume going to be able to get those price points down? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Hazel, you go. Be the villain. Twirl the mustache, because I'm curious to see what you have to say about this.
So I think I've met Henrik a few times at various things, and he seems like a really sincere guy. He's someone who's clearly really excited by what he's doing and by the ideas he's able to come up with and like what he's able to kind of envision. And he's someone who's like constantly moving on to the next idea. But what he's thinking about with those ideas is very much kind of like looking at what people need, looking at things like the ambition to make not, because, you know, a few years ago, Fisker were talking about like all solid state batteries and ludicrous performance. And now they've kind of moved away from that. And they're
because
much more
they
looking
IPO'd. At... Like, honestly, I think honestly, like they're making him be honest. Like you can't just go out and say all this crazy stuff anymore.
Yeah.
I guess that they take notice from another EV man who says, "Oh yeah, it's going to fly," and then all of a sudden stuff goes up and down, and well, mostly down, and people get cross. So you can't spout nonsense. That's bad.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't think it's necessarily nonsense when Henrik Fisk is saying it. I think it's something where he's done some beautiful drawings where he's worked something out and he's sat down and had like a big think about it. Like, he is an inventor, he is a designer, he is someone who actually understands how cars work. It's just that it's a bit like when authors have a really successful series and then they don't really get edited towards the end of it, and the books kind of deteriorate quite substantially, or like films or whatever. And I feel a bit like everyone's too in awe of Henrik Fisker's mind to be like, okay, cool, but like, we'll go away and make this happen. You sit in your shed and invent some more stuff or something.
Like, you need to give him an iPad and a pen and some fuzzy felt and just pop him in a corner and go, right, we'll actually work out. You've told people there's going to be a shape. We'll figure out what it all is. Let's have a quick rundown of the cars. So the Pear, the Personal Electric Automotive Revolution, says it'll be less than $30,000, with incentives that's just under 22.5. Is it possible to do that? What do we reckon? So he says, you know, there'll be a motor with a version with two motors and 300-mile range and things like that.
It's probably going to be a single motor variant that hits that price point, if at all. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, he's supposed to be making this with Foxconn in Ohio at the Lordstown plant, but it's technically not like sealed. The deal isn't sealed for that. So if they can get that done in Ohio by Foxconn, is that viable? And with those incentives obviously made here in the US, where their battery is going to come from, like, what, you know, potentially it has the ability to do that. I don't see it being like, it's a cool design. Oh, the solar panel really just drives me crazy because it's just a marketing ploy. But yeah, I think that eventually maybe they can hit these targets, but it's going to be really challenging, especially if this isn't coming out for a couple more years. Like, that's what I thought was kind of crazy about the Ocean, is that they said, okay, it's going to hit that $35,000 price point, but then it took so long to get out. And some people in the comments are saying that they're still waiting for their pre-order since 2019. And
yeah,
you know, like, prices are changing, like, things are getting expensive. How are they going to be able to do that?
I mean, yeah. Well, there's
look for the asterisks.
Things are going up. Yes, Steve in the comments said 25k before or after incentives. Always look for the asterisk. Yeah, I mean, if raw material costs go up again, which, let's face it, the world is knackered, probably will. It's going to end up being more expensive. It's always the danger of saying, ah, yes, it will start at this. Maybe. Like the $35,000 Model 3 that did briefly exist for a second or two, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that worries me is reading the story. The CEO said the Pear is aimed towards digital natives. Get in the bin, come on! It's digital natives.
Does it do its own TikTok? Like,
also, well, I mean, the
digital native. We're all young, or like, we're all in a demographic that would technically be classed as digital natives, I think, just about, in
I think we are of a generation where we grew up before the internet, but mostly with. So I think we would be, I think people 5-10 years younger are true digital natives, because they, you know, came out of the womb with an iPad and a set of giant headphones on to make car journeys a lot easier. But yeah, this whole like, oh, yeah, it's for digital natives because it's cheap. Well, come on. Oh, well. But thankfully,
that's his thing, is he throws every like spark buzzword marketing word at the, you know, it's like Faraday Future. They just deliver their first car and they like throw all these like crazy words in there, like AI infused, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I get what you're trying to do. every buzzword in the book. I get it.
Who's giving the advice to say, yeah, just digital natives, that's the phrase, go on, Henrik, off you go.
That's him. That's just him. He just, that's him. He exudes that.
So we have the pair. We also have, I'm going to save the Ronin till last. Let's have a look at the Alaska. What do we think of the Alaska? It's a pickup truck that somehow gets bigger. Not quite like that Audi, not Urban Sphere, the Active Sphere pickup, that it's an extending wheelbase vehicle. With the Alaska, it's a modified ocean platform. They say 340 miles, allegedly entering production beginning of 25. But its party piece is this rolled down midgate, the Houdini trunk, that means it can have a load bed from 4.5 feet to 9.2 feet. What do we make of this? I mean, it's an angry looking thing, isn't it?
I think it looks pretty good. I like the size. You know, it kind of looks like a mashup between like an R1T and a Santa Cruz, in my opinion. But again, it's just like, okay, maybe we'll see it in 2025. I like the idea of the midgate expanding it to like 9 foot to be able to take more with you. And that's practical. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's just always we'll see with him.
If that midgate gets past crash testing, I will be amazed.
Well, Silverado's coming out with something like that.
I sort of think.
And they've had it in the GM lineup for a while. Mid-gates.
Yeah. I don't know if I trust Fisker to deliver something that would actually get through crash or like decent testing in quite the same way that I think. I do think it's something that is possible. But especially given this is fundamentally the ocean platform and like kind of a little bit, I'm not convinced by that. If it does arrive, I don't think it's going to have that.
I mean, it's a neat thing, but yeah, as you say, it does raise some concerns. Let's roll on to the third of the four. Hang on, where is it? I've lost it. My mind and where I am in my notes. Hooray! Well done, Alex. Not the Ronin. That's saying that for us. The Force E. Now, the Force E is an ocean with bits on, by the looks of it. It's an ocean designed to go properly off-road, and it's got lots of cool things. And yeah, I get why. I think it's a nice option so that people can spend more money on their car. It's a nice way to say you're a rugged type, why not take it off-road? But is it a bit too soon for them to be talking about stuff like that? Is it to try and re-engage people? What are you guys' thoughts?
I think they're just trying to repackage something that they are getting their first deliveries out of. So that's my opinion. A lot of automakers do this where they, you know, they have a thing and it's, you know, similar to what we just saw with the Ford, the Mach-E Rally, that is, you know, repackage it, do something a little spicy, a little different. And, you know, that way you don't have to add more as far as development costs and things like that. It's a few extra cool things and maybe some software adjustments. And yeah, then get it out the door.
Get out the door, put bits on it, yeah. Send it out, make people happy, make some money. So the final car is the one that appeals to me because I'm a child. It's the Ronin. Now, Fisker himself, he's got experience with supercars. He's got experience with fast stuff, some of them good, some of them not. The Ronin is 1,000 horsepower supercar, hypercar. Does 1,000 horsepower make it a hypercar? Not sure. 0-60.
Not real.
It's not real. Well, yes, this is the thing. It's expected to launch in the US by the end of 2025. They say it'll have 1,000 horsepower. It's all-wheel drive. It's got a trick roof that's not supposed to eat up too much luggage space. It's supposed to be it looks super cool. I mean, you can't deny that that's very, it's quite a pretty car. It would certainly.
It looks like an Alpine that's been modified by a boy racer.
A boy.
Oh, that's harsh.
Sorry. I think it looks really naff, but something where they could have done literally anything because this car isn't real.
Yes. I mean, That is the problem. So they say it's at their own expense to launch the US by the end of 2025. How many times have we heard with the mega with mega fast cars? Oh, it'll come out then. I mean, what are we still waiting for?
Lots of goodies. I mean, I'm interested. Like, okay, so he had the eMotion concept,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was a somewhat similar form factor, like small car. Like, did he completely abandon that? Like, what's the deal there? I know that he was saying for a little while, as Hazel mentioned, that he was going to do solid state, and that was kind of like shelved. But what happened to the eMotion?
Maybe it wasn't digital native enough.
Maybe so.
So, Henry Fisker and his many, many cars and his box of delights and dreams. I wish them luck. I genuinely look forward to seeing it, because as you were saying earlier, Lacey, like, more manufacturers, more shapes, more variety in this space is good, because with EVs, obviously, it's kind of reset. It's leveled the playing field. People can get involved in it from now and not have too much heat. But if they keep saying this is coming and then failing to deliver, there will be some eyebrows. Now I want to move on to something completely different, because Hazel would like to talk about lube.
I would.
Hazel, tell us about lube. What is going on?
This was something I was reading about yesterday, and I ended up kind of like sending Seth a pitch where I was like, I want to talk about this because I think it's really interesting. It's not actually a like particularly super new story. It's but it's something where there's been kind of like some development since it was originally announced. And that's that Total Energies, who are of course actually a petrochemical company, have developed a water-based lubricant for electric vehicle transmission systems, or like generally for electric vehicles, which is really exciting, even if it was at lab stage. But they have also used a Formula E car to actually benchmark it against an existing oil-based lubricant, so they know that it has the required performance to be in what. A lot of people have like views on Formula E, but they are like race cars that endure very high temperatures, a lot of kind of abuse, bluntly, of the motor. Like, they run obviously a lot harder than a normal road going EV, etc. And they're using, you know, parts that undergo a lot of friction. So this was a really interesting story to me, because basically, although oil changes don't really need to take place hugely often in EVs, it has been kind of disappointing that a lot of EVs end up with a bit of fossil fuel stuck in them.
Mm.
Because if you're using oil-based lubricants, that tends to be the default. There are some synthetic oil-based lubricants that people like Shell are developing, but then that has a huge energy cost in terms of manufacturing that. So if you could make a water-based one, that would be great, especially because it's better thermally, it's better at reducing wear, and you know, there's some genuine advantages to it, beyond just the let's not put oil in things. But the understanding had been for quite a long time that you just couldn't really do it with EV systems, partly because of the high voltage, and partly because you simply couldn't make it slippery enough, effectively. So it's cool that this has actually been developed, that it has been proven to be good enough to be used in a race car, and that it's been benchmarked against the oil-based ones. It's something, it's a detail, but if you own an EV, it's the kind of detail where it is relevant. It is something that, you know, when options like this hit the market, that will improve meaningfully the performance and life of kind of elements of your vehicle. And yeah, so it was just a story that I thought was interesting enough to talk about, basically.
Interesting too, is I just watched Monroe Live just put out a video, because they are comparing the dual motor Rivian Enduros, the new Enduro motors and the quad motors that Bosch provided for them for the first, you know, platform for R1T and R1S. But they actually talked a little bit about that, about the switch from the quad motor from Bosch was a glycol water-based type mixture, which is not necessarily ideal, and that the new Enduro motors have an oil-based system. And Sandy was pointing out that that was, yeah, here's the video. It's actually a really great video. I'm very interested in this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not like an expert on it, but I always love to learn more about the engineering inside of this kind of thing. And they did a great job with talking about some of the differences between those. And I'm invested because I have an R1T order. So I'm really hoping I'll get those Enduro motors, and I really want them to put a heat pump in it when I get mine. So I'm just staying like really eyes peeled on this. It's a really cool video if you guys are interested in it and seeing what the difference between those two motors are.
Fantastic. So on slightly less luby news, should we move on to our to Tesla Corner? It's time to talk Tesla.
Tesla news.
Love a bit of, I love that. That's great.
Tesla news.
It's like a robot shouting into my soul. So there's three kind of big Tesla things this week. The first is the Tesla Universal Wall Connector, which is, it's just a game changer straight out the box, because it means anyone can charge anything and off of it, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's basically the magic dock of the home charging station. So essentially you have the regular Tesla NACS connector, and then the holster on the side of it is the adapter as well. So you just press that little button on top of the adapter and it releases. So you can charge not only a Tesla NACS compatible vehicle, but you can have a J1772. So this is awesome for people who have a 2EV household that aren't driving just Tesla models. But I also think it's so cool because I'm the type of person, I have like everything is electric pretty much at my house. I have an electric lawnmower, but I want to get like so many other things as far as electric recreational products. So in the news this week, that was kind of like minor news, but the Orca, which is Taiga's all electric jet ski, like I could see me plugging that using this connector too. So it has so much versatility, and Tesla makes great products. So I think this is so brilliant. I'm so happy that they came out with this, and a pretty dang good price point considering it's $595.
That price point is to me like the really exciting thing about it. I think the fact it's something that reasonably, you know, if you're buying an EV anyway, that's well within range, or like that's a pretty no-brainer purchase. If they can actually deliver it at that price and at scale, and with good installations, then like that's great.
Yeah, and it's 48 amps, so it's pretty much going to fulfill pretty much everyone's needs. So, I mean, I'm so happy about this. It looks so good. I don't want to replace mine because I don't need to, but I'm just going to use an adapter when I get my R1T, but I'm kind of tempted. Like, it's such an elegant solution.
Yeah, they've looked at the problem and gone like, this is how we fix this. This is how we make it accessible for everybody. And it kind of, it removes that. It's like the old days of mobile phones or cell phones, where does anyone have a Nokia charger? Anyone have a Samsung charger? Anyone have this? That it removes that, which is excellent. It's it's sort of a USB-C, but just with a plastic bit on it. It's a really brilliant solution. There has been a Cybertruck spotted. Well, there's been Cybertrucks spotted. The first one spotted is that it's been seen with completed crash ready markings on it, which means the big shiny pointy thing is on its way, or it's closer to being on its way.
Yeah, it's maybe several collisions closer to being on its way. It's cool that it's being crash tested. I hope that the crash testing was successful for all the people who have ordered a Cybertruck and would like them to arrive.
Yeah, we'd like them to arrive 2 years ago or whenever it was supposed to be. Mm. But at least something's being done, and that's quite. It's easy to kind of go. For the cynics, it's quite easy to kind of go. Oh, look at them! They've done a thing. But at least something's happening, which must be some small solace.
Yeah, this is a meaningful like waypoint in terms of getting closer to that final form that will be the production vehicle.
Yeah, I mean that's a good final bit of our Tesla news, and this one is kind of a bit. This one is exciting because one's been spotted moving. Someone got some drone footage of the Cybertruck driving in real time. One, it moves. Two, it's very shiny, which we like. And three, it seems to be quite agile. This film shows off its rear steer. It shows off what it can do. What do you guys make of it? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think if you're going to have a truck like this, it's got to have, you know, pretty decent turning radius because it looks huge. I mean, I haven't seen it in person, but it just looks monstrous. So I'm happy to see that it has rear wheel steer. I've seen videos before of it driving prior to this that kind of showcase that. But it looks like we're getting closer and closer. And I mean, some people are saying maybe we'll hit that September, you know, delivery event, and I don't know. Last week I said that I don't know if it'll even happen before the end of the year, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but the thing is typically, like, I think it's probably going to be how they did with the Model Y 4680. Essentially, they had employees get the first, you know, batch of them, and then they didn't release it to consumers for months after the fact. So I don't know. What do you guys think? I think that it's still going to be quite a bit of time since these are, you know, crash testing vehicles.
I mean, I know we was chatting about this a little bit before the podcast went live, but it's great to see what's actually quite an expensive vehicle doing basic driving maneuvers at low speed, I guess. Yeah. Like, I don't want to sound too mean there, but I don't know what Tesla were aiming to get out of this particular drive. And it's the media who have subsequently it's us who've interpreted as like, oh, it does a really good UE and things. I mean, we are seeing more and more of them around, and like the crash testing is obviously it, all of this is meaningful steps.
You're struggling there.
Nothing has happened that blows me away.
Yeah, it's the fact that so much is being made of the fact that it's been seen out and about, I think, is indicative of the hunger for it, because clearly there is. I mean, you've got the hardcore, the Tesla hardcore, but you've also got the people who were so wowed by this way back when. I know a couple of people who are like, I've put a deposit down. I was like, why? You live in London. But it's the fact that it's, one, it exists, two, it does actually move. We've seen it moving. The rear steer thing, it does look cool, and it does make what is clearly a massive vehicle. Like, as I've been nowhere near one. But funnily enough, they don't do much testing around Zone 2. So I haven't seen one. I did see a Lotus Eletra the other day. That was weird. It's cool. And it does, weirdly, from that kind of top-down view, I know the video is going on the screen at the moment. The story's on Inside EVs, but if you look at it from that top-down view, I kind of like the shape of it, and I didn't before, but it's kind of growing on me. But that's just me. Okay. Right. Before we send everyone off to their Fridays full of plenty of EV knowledge, it is game time. Are we ready? Are we ready? So your challenge is you have to pick one EV, but in honor of Car Week in 2050, what do you think? Which EV do you think is most likely to show up at the Pebble Beach Concours? We've done the Dawn Raid. We've gone out. We've seen all the Jaguar XKs, and we've seen the D-types. We've seen all those weird Delahays and the old Mercs with questionable pasts pushed out ready to be inspected by people in Panama hats with odd colored trousers and quaffing champagne, even though they drove there. But what in 2050 do you think will be representing EVs? Which EV do you think will be there and why? This is important.
Who wants to go first? Off.
Hazel, I nominate you.
Okay. So as part of my podcast villainy, I have to apologize because I have just realized I picked another car that is not available in the US. But that, to be fair, was part of my logic for why it might turn up as something where people were like, oh, this is kind of an exciting thing to see. So I think when the Nissan Leaf was not when it was first being built, but a few years in, the uneasy sisterhood between Nissan and Renault was on one of its kind of like chummier situations, and they used the same platform to build a Renault called the Zoe, which is a fairly bog standard little electric vehicle, much like this is one that was used filled with flowers.
Pictured currently having driven through the Chelsea Flower Show.
Yes. I quite like this as like a concept for how it might be displayed at Monterey Car Week. This was actually something to do with like flagging up the extinction of wildflowers in the UK. But yeah, it's a fairly standard little electric vehicle. And I quite like the idea that, you know, like these relatively early, relatively low range vehicles that didn't have hugely impressive features, but were like the first of the, or among the first of the modern era of electric vehicles, will kind of become beloved little classics. A bit like, I guess, like Volkswagen Beetles or something, where it's like, well, it's not a performance car, is it? But like, no. There's quite a lot of them where people are like, oh, but it's cool. that was my pick for, I think it would be an interesting, or a Leaf, to be fair. Like I gratuitously went for the Zoe because I like this set of photos.
that's yeah. Entirely fair. It's very, it looks gorgeous having driven through Chelsea. there's a fun thing about the Renault Zoe. When they were bringing it out, a lady called Zoe Renault tried to take legal action along with a couple of other Zoe Renaults, I believe, because they didn't like the idea of being called a small electric hatchback. They didn't win, obviously, because the car exists. Miss Go Electric, Lacey, what you got for us? What do you think will be there in the gin-soaked masses?
Yeah, this was tough for me because I had two in my mind. Naturally, I gravitated towards the Tesla Roadster because I was like, you know, it's such an icon. It kind of like just started the whole movement. But I ultimately went with the Rimac Concept 1. And the reason why is because there were only 8 of them made. And I took this picture. You guys, they have one for sale in Manhattan at Manhattan Motors. I took this picture back in March of 2022 and it's still available. So if you're in the market for a multi-million dollar hypercar that's electric that
it's
you want to take to the Pebble Beach Concours at 2050.
Yeah, I mean, our chauffeurs are now very happy. I've seen lovely cars been posturing as to what our chauffeurs will be driving. I think Hazel, I'll flip a coin for it. Heads, I'll buy it. Tails, you buy it.
The reason why I picked this was for a couple of, I mean, I love that it's pushed the edge to performance back when it was initially announced in like, what, 2013 or 20, something like that, the early 2010s. But yes, there were only 8 of them. And I think the story is what is fun about it, because when you go to these Concours events, you want to not only see an amazing car, but you want to hear the stories behind it. And I don't think anyone will ever forget that Richard Hammond crashed this and James May broke his leg. So I really just think that the whole package, it's an incredible high performance vehicle. And it was at its time, just the fastest production performance car that was electric, and only 8 of them. So it's extremely rare. So it just fits into that like Concours mentality.
Whereas the Nevera, common as muck.
Oh, sorry, Alex.
Yeah, common
as muck. So the Nevera, it's follow-up, common as muck. 1.6 million.
That's insane. That How has no one scooped that up?
I have no idea.
Like, sit on that and it just, you'll be able to sell it at one of the Sotheby auctions or something like that at Pebble in 2050. Come on, I just see it. It's so clear.
Easily. And you don't need to worry about the engine seizing up. It'll be fine. I have, I did pick one for this because I was curious to see what oddity. I was almost very cross with you, Hazel, for picking a Nissan Leaf, but I didn't pick any Nissan Leaf. I picked the Leaf Nismo RC from 2011. So that's a standard Leaf. The Nismo RC, full carbon body, everything stripped out, exactly the same powertrain. So it's still got a dizzying 107 horsepower and 207 pound-foot. So it was taken to the Goodwood Festival of Speed, and I was reading the press releases about it, and it said it was designed to show that EVs can be fast and exciting. This is 2011. This is Nissan giving it a proper heave-ho, which I think is brilliant. It looks great. It did the Goodwood Hill Run in 60.16 seconds, and at the time the record was 42.6 or whatever it was, 42 seconds, a Nick Heidfeld time.
The kind of one car.
In an F1 car, yes, which has been broken by the Mercury Spieling, which I really want to go in. The other interesting bit to this story is the same year Nissan set a legitimate record up the Goodwood Hill in a Leaf. They reversed it up. It was the fastest car to cover the 1.16 mile straight. It took 1 minute and 37 seconds. but I think this Leaf Nismo will be there because it's one of those moments where they go, look, we can have a proper go at this, and we can show that this is good fun. And I know it looks like, and I always think the Leaf, the Gen 1 Leaf, looks a little bit like a sort of stylized shovel. But with this,
honestly, it looks like the Lotus and the Roadster a little bit from the front there.
Well, with its beefy body kit, this thing looks mega. I really like it. So not only
is
it
got
this.
Why didn't they make this for real? Like, come on.
I think because no one would buy them. I think that might be it.
Do you want but to spend it looks more? Real fast.
It looks real fast. If it looks fast, it is fast, unless it's got 107 horsepower. I think it's one of those moments in time things where this will be the car that went up Goodwood Hill that was that kind of moment of it showed people that these things could be exciting. So I remember wandering around Goodwood, even the last 4 or 5 years ago, pre-pandemic, and you'd listen to people stood by the side of the hill, and when an electric car goes up, you'd hear sort of boys going, "Oh, this isn't very good." And then this year, those opinions have changed. They're kind of amazed by the speed and the look and the grace of them. So this can be pinpointed to one of those cars that at least started to change the conversation. And for me, that's where I put it there. Anyway, friends, we have reached our hour, which is a great shame because it means we'll have to say goodbye to both of you for another week. But thank you, everyone, in the comments for your lovely feedback. Sorry, I didn't read out as many of them as I should have done, which means next week I will definitely read one out. If you would like to get involved in any way, shape or form, do get in touch via contact@insideevs.com. Leave comments on social channels. You can find us in various places on the Internet. Hazel, what's your Twitter? How can people get hold of you?
My ex or whatever.
Your ex, I call it Twitter.
Whatever it is at HSouthwellFE.
And Lacey, I'm pretty sure everyone knows where to find you, but just in case they don't.
At Miss Go Electric on X and Instagram and all the things. YouTube, all those. Yep, every single one of them. Just Miss Go Electric.
Excellent. And I am on at A1Goy, A1GOY, everywhere. There's a weird reason behind it, but that's another story for another day. So for now, thank you all so much for watching. We will see you same time, same place. I'll definitely be in the same place. I'll be in my office. But we'll see you next week. Thanks very much and goodbye. I'm loving the silent waving.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.